Welcome to the Pure Flix Podcast, a show brought to you by PureFlix.com. PureFlix.com, the faith, family, and fun video streaming service. Get ready for uplifting news, scripture, movie reviews, and interviews with some of your favorite actors, authors, and pastors. Let's get started.
Welcome to the Pure Flix Podcast. I am Billy Hollowell, and we are excited to dive into today's show. Listen, there is so much going on right now in the faith world, lots of exciting things, and one of the authors who we have not had on the show before, he is a professor and author. His name is Jared C. Wilson. He is going to be joining us in just a second here. He has a new book out, The Gospel According to Satan, 8 Lies About God That Sound Like the Truth. And it's interesting, right? I mean, the title itself gets you thinking, The Gospel According to Satan. Well, what is that about? And I think you get a clue there in the subtitle that we are going to be speaking with Jared about some of the lies that Satan tells us as individuals, tells us as a culture. And so with no further ado, let's welcome Jared to the show right now. Hey, Jared, how's it going today?
It's going very well.
So your book caught my eye for a lot of reasons, but I think the big thing for me is looking at culture and just, you know, I teach at a couple of colleges here in New York, and I interact with a lot of young people, and there's this incredibly intriguing move in culture towards the self and this whole notion of, you know, I'm living my truth. And you know, you hear that a lot. And so in this book, which we're going to get into, The Gospel According to Satan, you deal with a lot of things that Satan says that are not true. But I believe this is one of the issues here that is so important today. What do you make of that, the whole our truth discussion?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. It really is sort of a radical reorientation around the self. And even though some of the, you know, the relativistic notions that go with that today, the idea that there's not an objective standard or an objective truth, that, you know, morality is relative to our own personal standards, even though some of those things philosophically have, newness to them. One of the things I try to do in the book is show that this is really an ancient lie. This is exactly what, the serpent was tempting Eve with, which was essentially to elevate herself, to enthrone herself. And that's basically what we're trying to do today. When I say I just need to live my truth, essentially what I'm saying is I am the center of the universe. What I determine or what I decide is actually true. And then what happens is, I end up bumping up against other people who are living their truth and it sometimes clashes with my truth. And if we're all just trying to live our own truths, we end up with a kind of, you know, chaos. And in worst case scenarios, you end up sometimes with violence and even bloodshed.
Right. Where does that end? This whole, like, if everybody has a truth, it's complete insanity. And I remember being in college and talking about relativism and in philosophy class and how insane it was to me, this notion that there's no baseline, that everyone just kind of, well, if there's no baseline, then there's really no regulatory structure at all, right? So you end up in this chaos. And it sounds so nice. I'm just living my truth. But everything you just said, and in the reality as we see it play out, everyone has a line. We all draw a line somewhere on where we decide something is or is no longer acceptable. And so with that in mind, getting into these lies that Satan tells, and that being one of them, what was it that led you to write The Gospel According to Satan?
Yeah, so I'll tell you, it actually was another book. I was in a bookstore looking through the religion section and came across a book that was something like Lies People Believe About God, that sort of thing. And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting, Lies People Believe About God. And I picked it up and I started, you know, thumbing through it and looking through the table of contents. And, each chapter claimed to cover a lie that people believe about God. And some of the things were lies. Some of the things, you know, I think, you know, Christians would agree, these things are untruths or half-truths. But there were some things in, you know, listed that I thought, gosh, not only are these not lies, these are like really important truths. Things like, you know, you don't need to be forgiven, and the cross was not about wrath, and things that actually strike at the heart of the gospel. And in that moment, the thought occurred to me, you know, if the devil wrote a book, it would, it might look just like this. And that's when, like, the light bulb went off for me. And I thought, oh, I could write a book that aims to kind of look at the popular ways, the popular cliches or ideas that sound true to us, but, actually have like that kernel of poison in the middle of them.
Yeah. And it's interesting that you chose to do this because I'm working on a book right now that deals with spiritual warfare and the impact of that on culture and society and the different beliefs that Christians have. And the thing that struck me the most is that because we live in such a material world and there's so much of the here and now and the my truth and it's all about me and we're taking selfies and we're on Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, and I'm guilty of some of those things. And there's nothing wrong with it in a healthy sense, but we're so focused on the self that we don't think about what's actually going on in reality in the spiritual realm and all of that. And so it's been eye-opening to me just looking at that deeper as somebody who is a journalist and who likes to kind of look at facts, that we kind of overlook a lot of facts of what is actually happening around us. Now, what would you say, and this might be hard to answer, but I'm going to just throw it to you because I'm curious, is there one particular lie that you found to be the biggest or the most pervasive?
I do think the live your truth is probably the most pervasive. Another one that I think is somewhat deceptive is your feelings are reality. I cover that in chapter 4. It's the fourth lie. Your feelings are reality. And it's somewhat similar to you need to live your truth. But I take a more kind of pastoral angle in that chapter, in that it's not simply about, personal identity or something like that, but really even about the times when, we may be going through a period of depression or suffering or hardship, and there's a dark cloud around us and we can't really see any kind of hope or we can't cling to any kind of, sliver of optimism or anything like that. And we just begin to think this is just all there is, or maybe this is the way it will always be. When the pain is so loud, it's very difficult to hear, voices of hope or whispers of hope in our life. And so I think the enemy loves to exacerbate that. He wants to come along to you and say, the way you feel right now, this is how you're always going to feel. There is no escape from this. This is the reality that defines you, whether it's a grief or even a guilt. And so I think that may be the most pervasive lie, just that we interpret our feelings, which are important. Our feelings tell us very important things. They're not unimportant to God, and they shouldn't be unimportant to us, but they don't tell the whole story. And so I just think that's a very common, misconception that we have. And it's just very easy to slip into that.
Well, yeah, and it is. And when you look at suicide rates and chaos and the things that are going on, those are lies that really have major ramifications, right? They do.
That's right.
How susceptible, and this is something that's just interesting to me, I think a lot of Christians assume, well, I'm a Christian, I'm safe, I'm protected, I don't have to worry about these things. How susceptible are Christians to these lies?
I think very susceptible. For one thing, the reason I covered these specific lies is because they each have kind of a ring of truth to them, or they have the semblance of truth in them. One working verse that has kind of driven my thinking in this book is Paul writing in Colossians chapter 2, where he says, "I write these things so you will be on guard against plausible arguments. I do not want you to be deceived by plausible arguments." And I just find that turn of phrase really telling, because sometimes, really blatant lies or really blatant sins, we may engage in those things, but we tend to see those things coming. We know clearly that that's a wrong thing to think or wrong thing to, to do. But our enemy is very cunning. And so if he can kind of hide, the lie in a half truth or in something that sounds pleasing to us or sounds logical to us, that sounds plausible, to use Paul's words, that's what he'll do. And so I think Christians can be very susceptible to this because we tend to lock up the doors that are the most obvious ones, right? We're not going to let the devil into, our obvious, doctrine or gross immorality or something like that. But there's a million different doors that the devil could use to get into our minds or into our hearts, and he'll check them all.
Yeah.
And so we really have to, we have to be on guard about biblical truth.
Well, and it's interesting too, because we talk a lot about this in the individual sense, right? But these lies are lies that, yes, they affect us as individuals, but they're often told at a 30,000 foot level in culture, right? They're told broadly, and again, that material world, not everybody, and in fact, most people are not even thinking or realizing that there may be influence, right, from Satan on the culture that we're living in. How does Satan impact our culture?
Yeah, well, I don't know all the inner workings of, his mission and, and how technically he's carrying things out. I think biblically, we see that he has, to some extent, minions at his disposal. There are, fallen angels that the Bible calls alternately, demons or evil spirits. I believe that they can be influencing those who are opposed to God in their hearts. They may not be, explicitly or superficially opposed to God, but their minds are set on their flesh. And I do think that there is an enemy influence on that. So whether that comes from, orchestrating events that they may visually see things that influence them, or whether it's some kind of satanic whispers, just like the temptations of the serpent to Eve or even the devil in the wilderness with Jesus. I think it's just, you tell a lie enough times, eventually people begin to believe it. And the bigger the lie, perhaps even the more convincing it will be over time, because, the audaciousness of it draws attention. I think we see that play out in the culture as well. There are things that are taken for common wisdom or a cultural value today that 10 years ago we would have said, oh, that's ridiculous. There's no way anybody would ever believe that.
Right. Well, yeah. No, I mean, and that seems to be happening more and more, right?
Right.
And also the chaos, the division, those are things that it almost feels sometimes it's palpable. You can't figure out what is creating this and then feeding off of it. And so you look at media and Hollywood, there's just so many areas of influence where, you see a lot of these lies being perpetuated. And when you don't have that spiritual rooting, it's really easy as people to start believing those lies. I mean, when you sit down with students and you talk to them, and I never tell students what I believe or think. I teach at secular, colleges. But what I say, I ask the questions about okay, do you believe that everyone's truth is their own? And when you start to kind of get into that with students, they'll say yes at first, but they start to realize that it doesn't make sense, right? Well, maybe that's not the truth. Maybe there is a baseline. And so I think it's amazing that you're tackling these things. The last thing I would ask you today is what is your big hope for people walking away from the gospel according to Satan?
Yeah, so it's really a threefold thing. One is just a reminder that we do have an enemy, that evil isn't just this impersonal force kind of out there in the ether, floating around intangibly, but we actually do have an enemy who wants to destroy us. We're warned about him by Jesus, by Paul. We see him even in the Old Testament working to afflict those who follow God. So I just want to, remind believers that we have an enemy who hates us and wants to destroy us. So awareness is just such a huge part of the battle. If we know he's out there and he's seeking to take us down, we would just be more on guard. But secondly, and more importantly, really, is that turning from ourself to the glory of Christ is really the only antidote to the ways the devil works. The through line through all of these lies, I cover 8 of them in the book, and they represent different kinds of thinking, different kinds of behavior or feeling. But the through line through all of them is really a kind of self-enthronement, as you said in the beginning, kind of a focus on ourself, turning away from God. And the hope that the Bible holds out for us is that we would cast our eyes on Christ, that we would behold his glory. And when we find him satisfying, when we find Jesus glorious and beautiful and loving and perfect and saving, we become really invincible against the devil's destruction, but also we suddenly become armed and more powerful against the lies that he's trying to tell us.
And protected, I would imagine.
That's right.
Yeah. And that's the key. I think a lot of people are afraid and they want to know, okay, what does it take to be protected from this? And it seems to me an awareness too, being aware consistently that once you've said a prayer, you've accepted Christ, you've started this journey. Well, it's not done. It's a journey and it's an ongoing relationship that requires that relationship. What do you do in any relationship? You continue to build it. So yeah, that's amazing what you just said. And where can people grab copies of The Gospel According to Satan?
Yeah, it's available wherever good Christian books are purchased. You can find it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Christian book distributors and all kinds of places like that.
Perfect. Well, thanks so much for coming on today. Really appreciate it.
Billy, thanks so much, brother.
We'll be right back with more of the Pure Flicks podcast. Did you know you can access thousands of entertaining and inspiring faith and family-friendly TV shows, movies, and original series? It's simple. Just log on to PureFlix.com right now to start your free one-month trial. From kids' content to some of the most uplifting films, we've got your entire family covered. Sign up today. And we're back with more of the Pure Flicks podcast.
Welcome back to the Pure Flicks podcast. I am Billy Hollowell, and man, that was a powerful interview. It really gets you thinking about the forces that are at work, what is going on in culture, in life, maybe the things we don't always see under the surface. We look at the material, we look at what's around us, but do we always consider the spiritual ramifications and issues that are at play? Now, I want to shift gears a little bit here as we inch towards the end of today's show, and I want to talk to you about James 3. And we've been working through the book of James. We have gone and done James 1, James 2. Here we are with James 3. And the interesting thing about James chapter 3 is that the majority of the book actually talks about, or the chapter rather, taming the tongue, watching what we say to other people. And I know for me, this has been a struggle in my own life, and I know a lot of us struggle with it, especially when we might think quick on our feet and we may not actually think deeply about what we're saying before it comes out of our mouth. We just kind of say it. And that's kind of one of those qualities, you know, that some people are just really reserved and quiet, or they maybe are very vocal. And when you're very vocal, it's very easy to not tame your tongue. So let's talk about what that really means, taming the tongue. Now, we see in James 3, verses 3 through 5, some really important elements. So I'm going to read it. It's a little paragraph here, but listen, it's very important. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal, or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder, wherever the pilot wants to go. Likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. And so James 3, 3 through 5 really talks about the fact that the tongue is this small organ, but that it can actually drive the entire ship. It can make us go in any direction that we choose to go in by how we misuse or use our tongue. And I think in our own lives, we could probably remember moments, and maybe we've had a recent one, where we've said or we've heard something that really has set off anger or frustration. Maybe we're the source of that anger or frustration. Maybe we've used our tongue to say something improper. Maybe somebody has said something to us, a terse word, some kind of chaotic, mean-spirited thing that has sparked chaos. So we know how powerful words can be. We tell kids sticks and stones will break your bones, but words will never hurt you. The reality is words can hurt. And again, the tongue is a small rudder, but it can speak life or inflict pain. And that is really a central piece of James 3. Now, the language goes on to say some really interesting things. When you get to verses 5 and 6, I'm going to read them to you. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. I don't know. There are very few verses in the Bible that elicit the kind of imagery that does. The idea that our entire lives can be inflamed by what comes out of our mouth, I think is not only an important reminder, especially in our divided times, but an essential piece of scripture that I always find myself coming back to. Because what we say, what we text, what we write, how we communicate, whether it's with our tongue or the message we're putting out, is so incredibly important to giving a lens into the people we are, to also giving a lens into the hearts that we have. It can set, again, our entire world on fire. So when we consider the evil we can inflict on others and ourselves, when we speak with hatred or anger, it really can be a convicting process. So this language really forces us to think about the pain. What pain have we caused others? How do we prevent that pain? How do we stop ourselves from diving in with saying things that are improper and hurtful? And so you can go through the whole entire chapter, James 3, and I would encourage you to do this. But we're called also to really avoid restless evil. And we're told that our tongue is full of deadly poison. Those are other pieces that we've got to consider in this. Now, we also want to make sure that we look at James 3, 9 through 12. And it reads, "With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth comes praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives on a grapevine bear and a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water." So you can read all of James chapter 3, specifically look at James 3, 1 through 12. You can head over to Biblica to check that out, or Bible Gateway. But these are just important lessons for us. And I think it's important, after you listen to this, and I know I'm going to do this in my own life, sit down, pray, ask God how you can live better the way that James 3 calls us to live, how we can interact, speak, and also how we deal with those around us who speak to us in a way that we feel violates the truths held in James 3. With that said, I hope you enjoyed this edition of the PureFlix podcast. Please tune in next week for another episode. We'll be continuing to work our way through James. Tune in next time and head over to insider.pureflix.com and facebook.com/pureflix for more daily inspiring content. See you next week.
That's all for today's podcast. You can follow PureFlix on Facebook at facebook.com/pureflix. And on Twitter at PureFlix. And be sure to log on today to PureFlix.com for your free month of access to thousands of faith and family-friendly movies and TV shows. Thanks for listening to the PureFlix podcast.